This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with Becky Sykes. How are you, Becky?
I'm very well, Chris. Nice to be here.
You're the program director for the Regenerative Viticultural Foundation here in the UK, a charity no less.
Yeah.
What we want to talk about today, we've talked about a lot about regenerative viticulture in the past. I want to talk a wee bit about water retention and maybe a little bit about biodiversity. We touched on that a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about trees in the vineyard, but we talk a wee bit about biodiversity and maybe a little bit about the certification process if possible.
Excellent. Looking forward to it.
Okay, so let's start off with water, because water in some places is difficult to get at too. If you're in Australia, you really want to hold on to your water. But even in places like Wales or England where it's wet, water retention is still important, because my councillor constantly on me about digging pits to grab water and stick it into the ground rather than letting it run off into the rivers and increase flooding risks. And I know there's a lot of issues with farms with water runoff, increasing flood events further downstream, but also increasing runoff, including nitrogen or any fertilizers you've applied. So if you can capture the runoff somehow, that even in wet places, it's useful. And in dry places, getting it into the ground is pretty important.
Yeah, it really is. And I think it does come into two kind of different climatic zones we're talking about when we start to talk about water. So if we think about somewhere that's got plenty of water, yes, we really don't want to be washing off phosphates and nitrogen into the rivers, especially lots of our vineyards are in zones where you're not allowed to let the nitrogen like come off your land. So actually trying to retain the water, and also when you are spraying, and people do spray other things as well, like compost teas, people do spray things that aren't necessarily synthetic nasties, you know. So if you're going to be spraying compost teas or something else onto your vines, you do need water for that. So harvesting your rainwater in whatever capacity you can do that is a really good idea. And also people like when you've got your winery waste water, which I find quite hard to say because it's got a lot of W's in it, people often kind of process that through a reed bed or through some aerating thing. But I'm moving away from regenerative viticulture here. But, you know, they process their winery waste water and then they can use it in their sprayers and things like that. So in the UK, we're just trying to really, we don't want to be taking municipal clean, fresh water. And we want to be keeping the topsoil from washing away, which is part of why you need to have roots in the ground all year round. In the hot places, it's a completely different story. So what's often happening now is I'll get maybe one or two really high precipitation events in the winter or the spring or something. Like in this week in Provence, Stephen at Domaine Mirabeau, I think he had almost a whole year's worth of rain in 2 hours or something. In those kind of circumstances, what you really want to do is, one, make sure it's not washing off, because that's the worst thing that's going to happen to you. And two, you want as much as possible to go into either basins, or there's this really cool new thing people are talking about called regenerative hydrology, which I love. I only heard about this a few weeks ago. And what this guy's doing is he's using what are actually quite old techniques, which is what they call the key line, which is a way of reorienting your rows. So the water is kind of tilted. So the land tilts the water back in towards the vines so that it stays in under the vines rather than washing downhill. If you think about a traditional vineyard, usually the rows just go straight down the incline from top to bottom. That's usually how they are. So instead of having that, you're reorientating them and tilting it. So it's kind of got a lip almost, and you're keeping the water in. And so that this key line thing is becoming quite popular for people to do. And then also completely looking at the whole landscape around the vineyard. So there's this one project I saw where the vineyard owners bought a couple of hectares of forestry just next to the vineyard so that they could direct the water from this forest into the vineyard and keep it in these, they're called ponds. I think the proper word is basin. So these water basins where they keep it. So you're looking to slow down the flow of the water. So that's your kind of key line or whatever, and then capture it as much as you possibly can. And then also having trees and roots in the ground, keeping the water deep down in the soil so that then when you haven't got that rain when it hasn't rained for months and months and months, or you're in year two of your drought, you've got as much as has fallen, you've got there available for you to use. That's the ideal.
Do you guys encourage irrigation? Because some people claim that if you irrigate, you allow the vines to stay, the vines get everything they want on the surface, you know, all the nutrients are normally at the surface, not in the bedrock underneath. And normally the reason vines go deep is not to get to nutrients, as people often think. It's actually to get to reliable water sources. But if you're irrigating, then you're encouraging the roots to stay near the surface because they don't need to go deep. Is that a issue for you guys?
So yes, what we try to do is get people to use as little water as possible. And you are absolutely right and extremely well educated, Chris. I have to say, I know you've been doing this wine show for a long time, but yeah, you really do know your stuff, so that's very good. So someone like Jason Haas at Tablas Creek in Paso Robles, who is the kind of first very vocal regenerative grape grower for wine. He talks very much about how he now bush trains his vines. So when he first started, he had trellis, vertical shoot positioned trellis, you know, where you've got all the shoots going obviously vertically, the classic that people see. And then he moved over to head trained bush vines in quite a kind of spread apart kind of grid. And he said that he would only irrigate them after he planted them, like maybe once, maybe twice in the whole growing season, the first year, for exactly that very reason, because you want the vine to get its roots down as deeply as it possibly can. I think the thing is with regenerative viticulture is that we want to encourage people to use moisture sensing technology, because one of the great things about regenerative viticulture is some of this is kind of like best practice of what people used to do, best practice viticulture. But some of it's really using really, really new advancing technology. You were talking earlier about the robot weeder that can identify a thistle. So there's lots of really cool technology like moisture sensing technology, technology that'll tell you how much carbon stored at different depths in the soil, you know, things that tell you all sorts of exciting things, and there'll be so much more coming down the line. I know one guy who uses a drone to drop predatory bugs to kill off mealybug. So he'll have scouted it with the drone to find out where the problems are, and then he'll send a drone in to drop those predatory mealybugs onto the unsuspecting other mealybugs. And he's also used sniffer dogs to sniff out leaf roll virus. Sniffer dogs that were unemployed post COVID, really peculiar. They'd been sniffing out COVID and then were now sniffing out leaf roll virus. Really fascinating kind of things to be going on. Anyway, I've gone off on a tangent. I'm really sorry. Moisture sensing technology, it's really come a long way. And so if you're going to use irrigation, which, you know, obviously people need to use irrigation, not everybody is in a position to be able to not have irrigation.
Especially for young
But
vines.
yeah. So the idea is if you're going to do it, have some kind of drip irrigation that is tied into your moisture sensing technology. So you're only using it when you really need it. And then try and be using something that isn't fresh municipal water as your source of water. So ideally something from on the farm. So you've got your closed loop, they call it, for everything, your nutrients, your water. You're aiming for a closed loop system. You know, maybe if you're getting recycled water from off farm or something like that, but ideally you're not using fresh drinking water or fresh water for your irrigation.
So when it comes to regenerative viticulture, it's more about just making sure you don't use new inputs more than anything else. And when you do use inputs, make sure you need those inputs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really.
So you're saying earlier about mealybugs and predator insects. I suppose that is a form of biodiversity. And in one of our first interviews we did with you, you talked about trees in the vineyard, again, for biodiversity. A lot of vineyards are, well, they're monoculture, aren't they? They're just rows of genetically identical plants. So why do you think biodiversity is important in the vineyard?
So we talk about biodiversity both below ground and above ground. And I know in previous weeks we've talked about a lot about biodiversity below ground and the soil microbiome. But biodiversity above ground is equally important, not only because there's lots of species being lost through monocultural plantings, but also a lot of these creatures in this biodiverse kingdom do offer us what we call ecosystem services. So one of the synthetic inputs that we want to reduce is insecticides. And actually, this is one of the types of synthetic chemicals that people find a little bit easier to eliminate. In fact, lots of people have managed to eliminate them. And that's because if you have lots of birds and bats and insects, ladybirds, things like that, in your hedgerows, in your trees, in your woodland, in all those kind of bits of the vineyard that aren't the rows of the vines, you know, there's those funny little areas around the edges that don't get planted up with vines, the bits along the streams or whatever. So you get lots of creatures living in those, and they provide these ecosystem services in that they then often come in and kill off your bugs. So you get these predatory wasps and things like that that will predate on some of the pests that you don't want. So what we're looking to do is to have as much biodiversity above ground as we can as well. And in particular, the studies into things like trees, and if you have trees, you get quite a lot of bats, and different species of bats will fly. They have different flight patterns for different, and how far they're willing to go out into the middle of a field or not to kill off all the kind of nighttime flying things that you don't want, the moths maybe that you don't want, some of the ones that do damage to the vines. So that's why we're really interested in biodiversity as well. And people are putting up things like bat boxes and bird boxes. And I was looking at this really cool camera that was in an owl box, a barn owl box somewhere in California. They were showing you, in fact, it was quite gruesome because it kept showing the owl flying in and out with a rodent in its mouth. But they have a big problem with gophers in America. I'm not even really quite sure what a gopher is, but it's a rodent and they do a lot of damage in vineyards. And apparently, a family of barn owls, mum, dad, and I think maybe four owlets, I'm not quite sure what they're called, can get through about 1,000 gophers in a growing season. So, you know, these things are really important because they things that, well, obviously you're not going to kill gophers off with insecticides, but the smaller creatures do get rid of quite a lot of the insects for you. So having a really strong diversity is a really good thing.
So it's really about using the diversity to manage insects that you don't want in the vineyard that are predating on your grapes.
Yes. I mean, people who know a lot more about this know exactly what you need to encourage to come in to kill off other things. And no one's saying that you can kill off everything by having really strong biodiversity, but you have a much better chance of doing so if you try and increase biodiversity in your hedgerows and those kind of areas. You know, because what's happened, you talked about monocultures earlier. What happened was the vineyards in the old days, if we go back in time, they all used to be quite small and kind of surrounded by hedgerows. This is before the tractors and the big machinery came along. So then what happens when the tractor comes on, which the tractor was great because it made life so much easier for everybody. Farming was really hard before the tractor. I'm not saying tractors aren't good, but then what happened was it was much easier when you've got kind of machine harvesting and things like that. They're big machines. You end up taking out a lot of the hedgerows. So you end up with these huge vineyards with no other kind of genetic diversity of plant material and nowhere for birds and bats to kind of roost or nest or whatever. So yeah, it has made a big difference. So people are starting to bring back these things and plant them back, even though it might make it more difficult to manage the land. They're thinking that actually they do need that diversity. So it's really promising.
The last topic I just want to touch on is certification, because regenerative viticulture is a process, like sustainable viticulture, like organics, biodynamics, that type of thing. But there's different types. Like organics has got certification pretty much sorted. You follow these rules, you tick the boxes, and you get your certificate. Same with biodynamics. You get some crazy preparation and homeopathic recipe, and you spray it and follow the rules, tick the boxes, and you're done. Sustainable viticulture is about process and auditing trails quite a lot. And then you get into things like natural wine, where no one can agree what the hell natural wine is, and therefore it's really hard to do a certification for it. And regenerative viticulture sort of somehow, I think, because you don't really have hard and fast rules, it's sort of a bit like sustainable viticulture and also a little bit by natural wine. So is certification an issue for you guys? I know there are some certifying bodies.
Yes, absolutely. It's not an issue for us at all. What we feel at the foundation is that you don't have to be certified to do this. It's all about taking that next step to improve the ecosystem of your vineyard, taking that next step to increase your soil organic matter. So it's all about taking incremental steps. But we do think it's really fantastic that there are some certifying bodies out there, and we think that some of them do offer really good value, because what they do is they get growers to comply with often quite high environmental standards, and they guide growers through the process of complying with these standards. You can inform your consumer about what you're doing, because people are going to really quite extreme lengths to make sure they can get these certifications. It can potentially open up new markets for you. We've been starting to hear about some of the big retailers asking if people have got regenerative certification, so it might potentially open up some new markets. And it provides validity to claims, you know. So otherwise, you're at the danger of greenwashing, aren't you? So whilst we don't think people should certify, and in fact, some people really genuinely don't want to because they don't want anything to do with the certification process, but there are some really interesting schemes out there, and there are about five schemes now.
What are they?
So interestingly, you were talking about organics earlier. The biggest one, the one that's certified the largest number of vineyards, is the Regenerative Organic Alliances Scheme, which is called Regenerative Organic Certification. And that did the first one, I think it was in 2020, which was Tablas Creek in Paso Robles. There are three different levels, so bronze, silver, and gold. And there's only two vineyards in the world with gold. One is Tablas Creek, and the other one is Troon in Oregon at the moment. You do have to be organic to get your certification. So interesting, they specify that you must be organic. So there is a lot of overlap with organic. That's why, you know, we are actually really pretty much in the same camp as organic and biodynamic.
But
There are
there
now, I
are
think.
conflicts between organics and regenerative viticulture in terms of things like ploughing, heavy use of copper sulfate, and things like that. So there are conflicts there that will need to be managed carefully.
There are definitely different views on things. So yes, but if you have to be organic, you can't use herbicide. So then you have to use something else, don't you? So that's one of the things with certification. Of the five schemes, I think two of them require organic and the other ones don't. I think when people are looking at a certification scheme, they would look down what the prerequisites are and choose the one that suits them, because they are all different. So Regenerative Organic Certification, ROC, they were formed by the Rodale Institute, which is a kind of American organics organization, with Patagonia, the clothing brand, with very high welfare. And there's a strong element of workforce rights, and there's a strong element of animal welfare. So you have to be organic, and there's elements of workers and animals in there. They've just done the first one in Australia, which is Inkwell Wines. They've just done their first one, or they've done several in Austria, and they've done a couple in Argentina. I think maybe one in Chile. Yeah, so they've done about 20 in total. Then there's the Regenerative Viticulture Alliance, which is from, you were talking about Miguel Torres and the other week, and their organization, they are doing it slightly differently, but it's the only one that's specific to viticulture. But they also require, you don't have to be organic at the beginning, but you do have to be organic by the end of the transition process. And they actually certify the wine. So that it's not the grapes, it's the wine as it comes out of the winery. So they're certifying that the grapes were grown regeneratively, and they've gone into the press and they've come out in this wine. That's what they're certifying. So I think the first ones are going to be coming out this year. So it's all really, really new. Only the regenerative organic certification has been going for several years. The others are really new. There is also one called A Greener World, and they have just certified their first vineyard, which happens to be in France, and it's France's only certified regenerative vineyard. Then there's one called Regenified, which has been set up by Gabe Brown, and he's the real pioneer of regenerative agriculture. And there was this Netflix documentary, Kiss the Ground, and he's got a book called, which I can't remember what the name of his book is, but he's a real pioneer in regenerative agriculture.
Just on that, that Netflix, you mentioned that when I spoke to you on the phone earlier in the week. Is that the Netflix Kiss the Ground, did you say?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I might watch that.
And Regenified, so Gabe Brown's Regenified has just certified their first vineyard, and that is in Mendocino, the Mendocino Wine Company in California. And then the last one is Land to Market, and that one's from the Savory Institute. There's a famous regenerative ag guy called Alan Savory, South African, and they have just certified their first vineyard in America again, called Maria. It's Maria with an H on the end, and I don't know how you pronounce it. So sorry, Maria. I'm sorry, Mike. So they've just been certified as well. So it's really an exciting time. You know, you've got this kind of established one with the regenerative organic certification, which is really seeing an explosion in the last year or so of vineyards wanting to certify. And then we've got four organizations that have just certified their first ones in the last year, in 2023. So, you know, it's all to watch, I would say. It's really an exciting time. But for us at the foundation, we think it's absolutely fine not to certify as well. We're very neutral in certification.
One of the advantages you get with the certification process is normally you can stick a logo on your wine bottle and that raises brand awareness. And that's one of the key things I think biodynamics and organics have done really well is, you know, if you see a Demeter or whatever it is, you know what it means. Whereas I think things like sustainable viticulture, they've really failed on that. Cause I'm a big fan of sustainable viticulture, but they've failed to really raise awareness in the public about it. So whilst you might think it's not important for the viticulture, I think for your organization or your movement to get that brand awareness is really important if you really want it to catch fire.
Yes, I'm sure you're right. In fact, I think we just want to make sure that people don't feel obliged to go down that certification route. Because it's very new, once you start putting in kind of strict rules around things, you can stifle innovation a little bit. I don't know. You know, maybe it wouldn't allow a robotic weeder, I don't know, to who knows, but you know, maybe those rules mean that actually it can't evolve as naturally as it would have done. I don't know. So yeah. I think we want to be a broad church that invites and welcomes people in, however regeneratively curious or regeneratively minded they are, you know. So we just want people to be interested enough and to think, oh, yes, I think this could work for me in my own context, because it is so context specific.
Yeah. Okay, then. I think we'll wrap it up there, Becky. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, excellent. Thank you.